Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Get investment expertise that provides the optimal outcome. Search NetBank Bigger Picture Business Banking.
During this pandemic, few issues have stirred as much heated and emotive debate and provided a glimpse of the ruling party's innate tendency towards authoritarian rule by diktat than the banning of the sale of alcohol. The industry is wilting with job losses mounting up and downstream, while doctors have welcomed the extra ICU capacity, certainly over New Year. The country's largest brewer, SAB, has cancelled a further 2.5 billion rand in new investment and says over 165,000 people have already lost their jobs as a result of the various alcohol bans. While it's believed that the ban has helped free up some ICU capacity in the short term, South Africa's wine industry could lose an estimated 1.5 billion rands worth of stock as it runs out of capacity to store excess wine within the next couple of weeks, with the new harvest imminent. Last year, Agri Western Cape reported that the initial ban on sales resulted in losses of more than 3 billion rand in the wine industry alone. And just as a reminder, under the adjusted level 3 regulations, alcohol sales are banned for both off-site and on-site consumption and the transportation of liquor, except where it's in the use of manufacturing of hand sanitizers and cleaning products, or for storage is banned. Let's welcome our guests, Department of Science and Technology and National Research Foundation Research Chair in Vaccine Preventable Diseases at Wits University, Professor Shabir Mahdi, Ken Forrester, otherwise known as the Maestro of Chenin Blanc in the country, one of the doyens of the local wine industry, Maurice Smithers, Chair of the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance, and Bruce Jack of Bruce Jack Wines, twice named Winemaker of the Year, and more recently he's turned his winery into something of a food kitchen, and I'm sure he's rather sad that he can't be surfing in Muizenberg. Now, Professor Mahdi, we can travel in taxis that are 100% full, we can attend funerals up to 50 of us. What are the root causes of the recent flare-up of COVID cases, and what sort of return does banning alcohol get as a strategy?
So good afternoon, good morning to you. So the main reason for the resurgence that's being experienced currently is really multifactorial, but the two key drivers are firstly is allowing mass gatherings happening, including when we went into level one. Unfortunately, the reality of mass gatherings, as an example, even in the United States, is that they're directly or indirectly associated with more than 80% of all infections that takes place, especially during resurgences. Now, the second thing which unfortunately worked against us in South Africa is the evolution of a virus that's much more transmissible, at least 50% more transmissible than the earlier versions of the virus that were circulating during the course of the first wave. So those two things together really has brought about this massive resurgence that we're currently experiencing, with all indications being that the total number of hospitalizations as well as the total number of deaths from this resurgence would exceed what we actually experienced the first time round during the course of the first wave.
And in terms of an investment in a strategy to free up beds and to give the healthcare sector some space to deal with these rising numbers of infections, what do you make of the decision to ban alcohol outright?
Look, the reality that we face is that South Africa has always had a fragile healthcare system. It simply is not resilient enough to actually meet the demands of what occurs on a year-to-year basis. So there is an issue in terms of capacity, both in the public as well as in the private sector. What we do know in terms of alcohol misuse in South Africa, it does contribute to a significant amount of injury, which ends up in hospitals, which really puts additional pressure. So in the context where you're running out of beds to basically manage things that you can't really prevent, which happens to be COVID-19 right now, you need to free up space. And in that sort of spirit, unfortunately, you need to make some calls to bring about some sort of relief within the hospital setting, and that is to free up beds. And one of the approaches that government has used is to try to reduce the type of healthcare utilization, which is a consequence of alcohol abuse.
Now, in their court papers challenging the alcohol bans, South African Breweries calculates that alcohol-related trauma accounts for around 2,000 general ward beds per week nationally. That averages out at 5 beds per hospital and a further 1,600 ICU beds per week nationally. And Maurice, just to bring you in here, if you look at that, that averages at 4 beds per hospital. So if that is indeed true, it's unfathomable why government has not capacitated each hospital with 5 to 10 additional ICU beds in the last year. It certainly had ample time and ample warning in order to beef up the healthcare sector.
That is true. It's very difficult for us as a civil society organization to know the intricacies of the health system. And it is true also that the health system does need to be beefed up generally, not even just for COVID. We know that it's a very unequal hospital system that we have, health system we have in the country, and that improvements are needed all round. But it has definitely become very clear that in all three, prior to all three of the bans and also post the bans, that trauma incidents related to alcohol did increase dramatically, particularly over weekends. Our position is that governments, I think Professor Mahdi has pointed to the fact that ultimately the reason for having the ban, and I should say from the outset, is that we don't call for a ban. We don't think that a ban is a good long-term solution. We much prefer the idea of putting in place effective regulation based on the 2016 alcohol policy, which was adopted by Cabinet, and on the Liquor Amendment Bill, which has been on the back burner for the last 4 years. But we assume that we also assume that when government particularly made this third ban, that the ban was made taking into account all of the factors, including the economy. And it's important to remember that President Ramaphosa used to be a chairperson, or on the board at least, of SA Breweries. So it's not as if he in particular is not aware of the challenges facing the liquor industry. So we believe that they took a very, very hard decision both to stop the super spreading of the virus and also to release the beds. We believe that they should try and lift that ban as soon as possible, perhaps go back to off-consumption sales, because going back to on-consumption sales will increase the problem of social spreading. But in the long term, we need to say, given the fact of what we've learned over the last period about the pressure on trauma units, we need also to think about the future. Do we want to actually have a society where every weekend hospitals are inundated with trauma cases related to alcohol, whether they be alcohol-related violence or alcohol-related car crashes? There was a very interesting comment made by a doctor from Critiskill Hospital after the first ban was lifted. He said that one of the blessings of the first ban was that the trauma units no longer had to experience the unmistakable combination smell of blood and alcohol that they had to endure every single weekend.
And we'll come back to that, Maurice, on that opening point. We'll come back to that and what effective regulation would mean other than an outright ban, because I think it's very hard to argue with the fact that there is an alcohol abuse problem in the country. It's in the remedy, perhaps, where I think many people are now differing because of the real suffering that is being experienced across the industry, across the value chain. You look at Consol, 8 million a day to keep the furnaces going. You look at job losses. Bruce, to bring you in on that point, you recently wrote a very personal account of the impact of COVID-19 on the winery and the surrounding community. Can you just share what the pandemic and the ensuing bans have meant for the people of the Southern Overberg?
Sure. Well, look, I agree with everything that's been said. I mean, we have an endemic alcohol abuse problem. But I think that's a little bit like saying, you know, that you've got to ban kitchen knives because we want to stop stabbings. There is the alcohol abuse issue, and I agree with Maurice, needs to be tackled holistically. And I think we really need to underline the core reasons for it. And if you read widely in terms of what contributes to alcoholism on a systemic scale, like we've experienced and experiencing in South Africa. You can look anywhere. You can look particularly to Scandinavia and the underlying issues there. The underlying issue really is about poverty, and it's about hopelessness. So the kind of introspection that is required to work out what the core issues are, rather than just the plaster that you put on top of that core issue, I don't think we have the ability at the moment in South Africa's leadership to do that. I think it is changing. I'm very hopeful that it is changing. But we need an economy. We need to give people hope. We need jobs. We need all those things. If you give people a reason to live, they then lose the reason to lose themselves in alcohol. This we know about humanity throughout the world, and it's not just a South African problem. So, that having been said, there's a huge difference between the abuse of alcohol on a daily basis to lose yourself, and a thriving, normal alcohol-consuming society, which, you know, let's face it, this is the oldest and most sophisticated drug in the world. Humans have been making, and probably the evidence is that South African humans were the first ever to produce alcohol, for probably 150,000 years, originally from honey and mead. And there's a reason we have a bird called the honey guide. It's showing you where the honey is, right? And I think that all needs to be taken into context with the absolute collapse that is taking place of an industry which, while it's not perfect, and there are definitely improvements that can be made in terms of things like the PubSec and exposure to that kind of nefarious, underhanded context within the wine industry, which I absolutely abhor. I think generally this is an industry that is also contributing on so many other levels in a lot more value-added way that with this blanket ban has completely crippled. And there's a sort of a problem with agriculture, and that is called seasons. And things don't just stop. Mother Nature doesn't get the memo, So to keep that thing going, to keep that momentum going, takes generational commitment. And you just take away, what are we going to, we're looking at 17 weeks now, almost, what is that? Almost just over a third of a year that we haven't been able to operates locally. It's crippling, and we're in big trouble.
And from that business perspective, you raise several very interesting points, Bruce, but I just want to zoom in on the business perspective, Ken, with you. And from what I've heard from a lot of business owners, wineries, is the uncertainty with the specific ban. It's not like government said, right, there's going to be a ban for a month, and you can then plan your cash flows around that, you know how much you might need to borrow, or make alternative arrangements around some of these issues. It's open-ended. There is a lot of uncertainty. Just talk to me about some of the business impacts that are being experienced at the moment.
Like, it's really quite dire, the impact that this extended and this third ban has had on industry, and it really is a very, very blunt tool to be taking to a problem which is quite complex. And the fact that government entertains no questions, that we almost have a dictatorial form of governance, it just absolutely speaking to us if and when government feels that we should be spoken to, with absolutely no recourse and no debate, no discussion. It is absolutely toxic to the workplace. Businesses simply cannot afford to continue carrying staff with no income. And, the total ban on sales, and people very glibly say, oh, but you can export. Well, I must just point out to you that a lot of the world is closed down for various COVID reasons in many ways. In most of America, in the big cities, indoor dining has been banned. Well, the temperature in New York at the moment in the evenings is around -6 or -7. Who wants to sit outside? It's not going to happen. So the demand for our alcohol, for wine, for example, that goes through restaurants, we don't have that demand. So there is a very limiting factor even on exports. It's not as though exports are that'll fix it. That'll cover that. There's no way that that's going to happen. And in the case of smaller producers, I've had a number of calls from people I know, from smaller producers saying, look, I'm a little bit stuck At this stage, I've still got 50,000 litres of Chenin Blanc, 80,000 litres of Pinotage, 60,000 litres of Cabernet. Can you possibly help me take some of that volume? I'll give you a reasonable price. I'm going, well, I can't do it. What am I going to do with it? I'm in the same position as you, where we still are carrying stock. The industry is carrying probably 50% of its stock from last year, which is yet unsold. And in a small business, that's your cash flow for the following vintage. No cash flow equals no vintage for a lot of small producers. I would tell you that there are probably 100 small producers who are not making wine this year. Now, those vineyards and those grapes that have been farmed won't go away. They're there. Who's going to take them? So you end up taking the alcohol all the way down to agriculture, to the most basic level of the vineyard worker, the farm worker, who now will have no reason to be employed.
Shabir, if we go into some creative problem solving here, and there has been a call made in the editorial today in Business Day for off-site consumption, Maurice, something that you mentioned as well. What are some more creative solutions to help rescue this industry rather than the blunt instrument of an outright ban?
So I think I fully agree with others that it's not about an alcohol ban that's going to assist us in terms of the damage that's caused by alcohol abuse. It's really addressing what are the sort of enablers that result in alcohol abuse, and especially the pubs, clubs, shebeens. Unfortunately, in addition to abuse in those sort of settings also lends itself to greater likelihood of the virus transmitting between people, knowingly or unknowingly. And when having this discussion, I think we shouldn't be under any sort of delusions. COVID-19 is not going to go away in South Africa after this resurgence. In all likelihood, just during the course of 2021, we're still probably going to experience another 2 to 3 resurgences just in 2021. And unfortunately, in terms of our current capacity to be able to get vaccine to a meaningful percentage of the population anytime soon, we might well end up with resurgences going right into 2022, which is not just a disaster for the alcohol industry, it's a disaster for many, many other industries, in the hospitality business. So whatever decisions are taken, it really needs to look beyond what we're experiencing currently, and those decisions are things that we need to be able to sustain without loss of livelihoods at multiple fronts. So there's difficult decisions that need to be made, and we would be foolish to believe that we can prevent all deaths from COVID-19. It's really trying to spread out those infections over as long period of time as possible. So again, the focus really needs to be centered around mass gatherings and looking at when exactly the sort of abuse takes place. And I think the figure that you gave earlier, unfortunately, I would need to dispute that figure about there only being about 2,000 alcohol-related hospitalizations at any point in time. I've been at Baragwanath Hospital, and I can tell you the number in a day on a normal weekday is well north of 5 cases per day. So I think it's not useful to have those sort of numbers because it diminishes the impact that alcohol is having on society. But at the same time, we need to become much more nuanced in terms of our approach to alcohol and the hospitality industry more generally.
Those are the numbers used by SAB in its recent constitutional court or challenge around, I don't think it's a constitutional court challenge, but a challenge around the constitutionality of the recent ban. We'll have to talk to them about those numbers as well. Just before we move on the vaccine rollout, are you confident that government is going to be able to achieve its stated aim of vaccinating almost the entire adult population this year?
No, certainly not. We're not going to vaccinate 67% of the adult population by any stretch of the imagination, because that would require vaccinating 110% of the adult population. Because there's only about 39.5 million adults in South Africa to start off with, and we know just over half of the adults have indicated that they would be willing to be vaccinated. Again, it's sort of an example where more realistic goals need to be set that we can actually strive towards rather than setting goals which are simply aspirational and which we're doomed to fail on.
Maurice, what would you like to see implemented as a more sustainable long-term solution from here?
Look, our aim is to create what we call an alcohol-safe South Africa. As Bruce pointed out earlier on, alcohol is a drug. It's a drug that's been used not for 150 years, 1,000 years, Bruce. It's about 11,000 years. The evidence has shown that the first deliberately produced alcohol was in China about 9,000 BC. But since then, it has been used widely throughout the world. But an interesting study that was done in Britain in 2010 showed that out of 20 recreational drugs, the usual suspects, you know, alcohol, tobacco, heroin, LSD, dacha, and so on, a study of 20 different recreational drugs showed that alcohol by far outstripped all the others in terms of the overall damage it does to society. And more importantly, it showed that it was the only drug out of all 20 that actually caused more harm to the rest of society around the users than to the users themselves. So for us, the important thing is, how do we create a society going forward where we have where it's an alcohol-safe society, safe for the drinkers and safe for the people who around the drinkers? And for that, we need legislation. For that, we need to have proper regulations in place. And we are guided by the World Health Organization, a global strategy to reduce alcohol-related harm, which calls for three key things. The one is to reduce the availability of alcohol. The other is to increase the price, the overall price of alcohol. And the third is to limit or ban advertising. Those three things together will help then to reduce alcohol consumption, not to ban it altogether, but to reduce alcohol consumption to levels that are safe for the drinkers and safe for the users. And it's possible to do that. The World Health Organization reported in 2018 that over a period of 20 years, Russia, alcohol consumption in Russia was reduced by 43%. That can be done. That is going to have an economic impact on society, obviously, but then society as a whole must take mitigating steps to then create alternative employment opportunities for people. But we really do need to put in place long-term efforts to do this. And I think that if we do that, then if we have a pandemic of this kind in the future, there'll be no need to have a ban, because our whole way of drinking would have changed.
Bruce, as we've got a couple of minutes left to go, from your vantage point as the wine industry, what has your experience been with your engagements with government? I know last year you reached out and proposed to help with field hospitals and support from government. The president said last week that there's just no more money in the kitty. What's your experience been with any of the financial mechanisms like TERS?
Yeah, sure. That's like a kick in the stomach, that one. You know, we were told there was 100 billion rand there to help us in times of this. I'm not just talking about the alcohol industry. I'm talking about hospitality and tourism and other industries that have been shut down, industries that, you know, obviously not only bring in a lot of money for the country, but also provide a lot of tax-paying jobs. I think the reality is that we have no relationship capital with government as an industry, and that's purely our fault. I think we've been living in some sort of fairyland where we thought that what we were doing to mitigate the abuse of alcohol and to create jobs and to uplift our communities was being taken seriously. And I think it's just because we're fairly insignificant prawn in the whole political play. So it has been very frustrating not being able to have some sort of channel through which to communicate effectively as an industry. But look, I also understand that, you know, this is an unprecedented situation, and, you know, you at the same time, it is not about bashing government. I think that is a mistake. We know where the endemic corruption and issues have happened in our past, and I think we need to remain hopeful and remain supportive of the fact that there are signs of things happening. There are signs of things improving, and we need to be positive about that and continue fighting for justice for all and for the responsible use of alcohol, which I'm, you know, 100% a component of. So it would be nice to have better channels, but I think those channels need to be in a respectful environment in which we understand the holistic picture. There needs to be education on both sides. There needs to be respect and understanding, and then we can maybe have a conversation in which all these issues are taken into account, so that it's not the blame game, and it's and it's not just being critical continuously.
Ken, final comments. We've got about 30 seconds to go. What are your thoughts on the outlook for the industry from here if the ban remains?
You know, like, there's a brutal equation to be considered, and it's to do with, and we're looking at government currently trying to literally save us from COVID, and the net result is introducing us poverty. And the question is, those COVID lives now in the short term, how do they translate longer term from a poverty point of view? How many lives are we really hurting, impacting, and possibly going to lose as a result of poverty? You know, it's a long-term damage to society, and I think we need to find a happy road. We need to find some sort of go-between. You cannot destroy the industries. We are going to see another COVID wave and another COVID wave. The lockdowns don't stop COVID. They delay. So in the interim, we cannot destroy an entire industry or any industry.
I think bottom line is that we need to find another way. We need to find a way to find each other within industry and government in South Africa, or face a really long road to ruin as we try and rebuild the South African economy. That was Ken Forrester talking very passionately about what faces the wine industry in the face of this third alcohol ban, joined by Bruce Jack of Bruce Jack Wines, Professor Shabir Mahdi, and Maurice Smithers of the South African Alcohol Policy Alliance.
Don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Get integrated electronic banking into your business systems. Search NetBank Bigger Picture Business Banking.